Michael Schur joins us, everybody. Michael Schur.
How much did John Iadarola age in that break?
Still got the beard, still relatively white. Michael's here, Cenk, Jimmy Dore, Anna Kasparian. Michael always comes in with results. So we have some results in, not from Arizona, that's the United States representative race that we're covering tonight. But there's some state races that Michael's got results for you guys on in a second. And this is, of course, a special election for Trent Franks' race. And then, as we've been telling you all night, March 6th is Texas, but you could actually vote now. And by the way, voting early is a huge advantage for progressives, because you care. So, and when you care and you make sure you get out and vote, that's the big advantage. That's the energy, that's the wave, etc. So I want to go back to Texas and talk a little bit more about that and some polling in regards to Texas. But before that, results.
Phil Spagnuolo, who I know you've been waiting to hear about Phil Spagnuolo's night, but Phil Spagnuolo won a state house district in the state of New Hampshire. It was a +3 Trump district at last count. He won it by 8 points, so that's a 21-point swing. It's a state house district in the state of Connecticut. Phil Young won that seat, and it was a Clinton +2 district. When I say that, what that means is that Hillary Clinton won that district by 2 points. It was a Republican district. It flipped from Republican to Democrat tonight, as did the one in New Hampshire. There's one in Kentucky. I don't have results on that yet. That was less likely to flip tonight. But again, these state house seats keep turning and turning and turning, and that's good news.
So there was some math shenanigans that went you in the first one. You said it was a +3, and then he won it by 8, and you said it was 21.
It was plus Trump +13.
+13.
+13, and he won it by 8. And
right.
You know, my math is still, so is that 21, 13 and 8?
Yeah, 21 is right, but I think you said +3, it doesn't matter. So the fact that it was a +13 for Trump, and the Republicans lost it, great news.
Yeah.
Great news. It's been happening all over. My favorite was the one that just happened in Kentucky, was it? The 85-point swing, the legendary, I've never heard of an 85-point swing in my life seat. That was because it was little apples to oranges, because it was Trump had like a 40-some-odd point lead, and the Democrat won by 40 points. Mm-hmm. Well, it must have been 40 and 45 or something along those lines. But it was an 85-point swing.
It's crazy. Yeah. And so in the Kentucky race, actually, there was a Libertarian running against a Republican. I'm presuming the Republican just wiped the floor with the Libertarian. The Republican's name was Goforth. It would be a surprise if the Libertarian won that seat.
And his name is Goforth?
His last name is Goforth.
What is with these names?
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, there was a guy. There's a guy in the Arizona race who's a Republican whose last name is We Hunt. Like, they're just trying to find like weird Republican names.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
So Goforth will probably win that. So Phil Spagnuolo and Phil Young. The key, obviously, in House races is to be named Phil, and then you'll win state House races.
And I think that the Giants specialty coaches are, I think.
I knew you would do it.
I think Giant coaches are in huge demand, which is definitely not true. Okay. Anyway, so let me tell you about, let me tell you about Texas, okay? So first of all, Beto O'Rourke has outraised Ted Cruz in the last two quarters. So the beginning of 2018 through mid-February, he's outraised Ted Cruz by $1.5 million. I'm not even quite sure how he's doing that. He doesn't take any corporate PAC money. I don't think he takes any PAC money. And he raised $2.3 million so far this year, and Cruz only raised $800,000. In the last quarter of 2017, he did it again. Cruz raised $1.8 million, which is a lot, but Beto O'Rourke raised $2.4 million. All right, let's see if Michael Schur knows. This is always fun. Last Democrat to win a Senate seat in Texas.
I would say the last Democrat to win a Senate seat in Texas may have been Lloyd Benson.
Man, the guy's good. They don't call him epic for nothing. 1988, Lloyd Benson.
They probably haven't won statewide since that. Maybe maybe Bob Bullock won in the late 90s or something, but they haven't won.
Wow, you're unbelievable, dude. Bob Bullock, lieutenant governor in 1994, last statewide win for
Texas. Except I said late 90s. 94, really, the mid-90s.
This guy's unbelievable. I know Benson. I don't know Bob Bullock. What the fuck with Bob Bullock?
Bob Bullock, yeah. Right?
Listen, I've seen Quiz Show. I know how you guys do this.
You didn't fall for the showing up late thing? That didn't work? I was like, oh, yeah, just show up late. They'll never believe that I gave you the
answer. But you did have a little bit of an advantage because you once worked for Lloyd Benson in a roundabout
way. In a roundabout way, I did work for Lloyd Benson. Yeah. I worked for his vice presidential campaign.
Yeah, Michael volunteered for Dukakis Benson.
No, I was a paid employee for
Dukakis Benson. Oh, you were paid.
It was my first job out of college. I was four. And I was working for Dukakis Benson campaign in Florida.
And you lost in Florida, right?
We lost in Florida, but we beat we did better than Walter Mondale did in the previous cycle. So for us, that was the goal.
To beat Mondale. That's such a Democratic goal. To lose by less.
Well, I mean, there was no chance we were going to win that year. There was just absolutely no chance.
Did better than a guy who campaigned on raising taxes.
We did. Barely.
Okay, now here's another fun quiz for you guys. You guys can all participate in this. Hillary Clinton lost these states, but what order in terms of margin of defeat? Texas, Iowa, Ohio. Okay.
I'm going to go with Iowa because that's the one you don't think. Mm-hmm. So I'll say Iowa was.
There is a little bit of a trick. You need a couple of little. Yeah. So you're saying she lost Iowa the most?
Yes.
By the most. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Biggest percentage.
Biggest percentage. Okay.
I think it's Ohio.
Okay. All right.
I am going to say Ohio, Iowa, Texas.
Me too, yeah.
So it's a bit of a trick question because they're so close. In fact, Iowa and Texas are tied. She lost them by 9 points. Ohio, she lost by 8 points.
So Anna and I were really wrong.
We blew.
Yeah. No, but that's okay.
Like, so when you guys don't have the fix in, he gets it wrong.
How do you know we didn't have it on that one? When, like, why that one we didn't have a fix?
Because I got it right. That's how I know.
Wait a minute. What if Jimmy and I had the fix in the whole time?
Iowa question.
The little twisty twist. Okay. No, the point being is that Ohio is a traditionally swing state. It was as purple as it gets until this election for so long. And so she lost by 8 points. She only lost Texas by 9 points.
Yeah.
So it's, and Texas, Ohio continues to get more red. Texas continues to get more blue. So if we keep going in that direction, it's not that unthinkable for a Democrat to close that kind of lead in a Senate race. So I think Beto's got a perfectly good chance. Now, here's another shocking, I'll stop with the quizzes, but I'm slightly shocked by this number. Trump's approval rating in Texas.
Current approval rating?
Current approval rating, 39%. That's it.
We didn't get to guess.
I know, I said I stopped.
Jimmy was going to say 39%.
I'm going to say 39%.
So his disapproval is 54% in Texas. 54% of Texans disapprove of the job Trump is doing. Only 39% approve. And by the way, that is now a worse approval rating that Trump has than in Florida, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. So Texas is head and blue, man. And we're going to get rid of this Electoral College. One, first of all, Larry Lessig has a great lawsuit that has an excellent chance of winning to get rid of the Electoral College. It's likely to go to the Supreme Court. A lot of great professors are on that case, and they're working hard on it. Second of all, the minute the Republicans lose Texas, they're going to be like, Electoral College, what name so? Right. Fuck that, no way. This is so unfair. Why would one man, one vote? That's what Bush v. Gore was, one man, one vote. What is this, the Electoral College? It's insanity. Because if Texas goes blue, good night, Irene. Unless Hillary Clinton runs again. Like the Democrats cannot lose the Electoral College.
Jeremy Byrd, who worked for Obama for America back in 2012 and 2008, then decided to move to Texas. The whole idea was to turn Texas blue, and this was like in 2013, around then. 5 years later, you're starting to see that. It's not only because of Jeremy Byrd, but they saw that there was a chance of doing this, and they saw, because of the changing demographic in Texas, that a lot of the Republicans were aging out, and now maybe that's coming to fruition with Beto O'Rourke. He's the perfect type of candidate for that.
Oh, I forgot to do all these videos. Okay, so, all right, let's have fun. Let's do more stuff. First of all, can I see TYTKansas.com? Can I see that? I mean, we've been checking on it all night. It's at $26,869. We're trying to get to $50,000.
What is
so,
this?
So this is for Brant Welder, okay, so that he could hire a field team. He contributed to TYT as a member and to our reporter campaign, our studio campaign. We're paying it forward here, and our audience is chipping in. He actually did a video to thank you guys. So it was really sweet. It's video number 4, and I just wanted to share it with you guys. So let's watch.
Hi, Cenk. Hi, TYT Army. This is Brant Welder reporting in from Welder headquarters here in Kansas City, Kansas. Thank you so much for your generosity over the last few days. We've already gotten in another shipment of our supporter cards. This is what we take door to door with our volunteers, asking voters to pledge to vote for me in this campaign. We have them fill out the information, and then we send it back to them right before the election as part of our get out the vote efforts. Your donations have helped us so much. You know, I've been a TYT member for many, many years, and have just been such a gigantic fan of what Cenk and what TYT and what the TYT Army have been doing to lead the progressive movement nationwide. And your donations now are allowing us to get another field office. We're starting to hire more field staff. So thank you so much. Please continue to give at tytkansas.com, because it will allow us to build the biggest grassroots field effort of any congressional race in the country. That's the goal. I know we can do it. I'm not taking corporate PAC money. I'm relying on people just like you from around the country. I appreciate it so much from the bottom of my heart. Thank you again, and we'll check in later on. Thanks so much.
So look, I keep emphasizing it because it would be amazing to have one of our own in Congress. And I don't mean just TYT. Of course, I mean a truly uncorrupted, truly progressive congressman from the heart of Kansas. It would be amazing.
But the TYT thing's a pretty great story too. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's not forget that. It's pretty cool that he would really be the one of us, because he came out of the stable here a little bit, right?
Yeah,
and the army.
That's right. And now we have Dylan Radigan running in New York's 21st district, and he was a TYT contributor. So we could have an interesting TYT caucus inside of Congress. So that would be amazing. And then, of course, there's Allison Hartson in California. So let's go get him. Let's get Brant Welder elected. He's already beating the Republican incumbent by 7 points. He gets that field team, and he's going to put him away, help him close. So, all right, now I'm going to tell you about Brianna Westbrook a little bit more. So Brianna Westbrook is another Just Democrat. Brant Welder is a Just Democrat. She's running tonight in Arizona's 8th district. We don't know which way that race is going to go. We're very excited about that. We're going to find out in about 25 minutes or so. We believe that's our best intel, is that that is when they're going to release the results, and that's why we're here tonight. But I wanted to show you a couple of videos from an interview I did recently with Brianna. Let's go to video 2.
This is our opportunity to send a message to the country that we can flip a heavy red district. It's just mobilizing the vote, making sure people are getting engaged, and exciting people, getting out the independents. This is our opportunity, and we have the message. I've been knocking on doors, and people are rallying behind this campaign. And this is our opportunity as progressives. This is the race to show our strength. That's why we need to really rally around this and make this a W for progressives.
So, by the way, Brianna is going to join us after the race, win or lose. So we'll check in with her and see how the campaign went, and what lessons learned, etc. So one more video from Brianna from actually last night when I talked to her at Rebel headquarters.
What I'm doing is heavy social media presence. I'm doing lots of texting because it worked for previous presidential elections. She's doing robocalls, paying for canvassers. All of my campaign is grassroots. I have people that are working sometimes 2 jobs that are coming here on their days off. I have people making phone calls on lunch hours. She's got paid staffers. All of mine are hardworking change makers wanting to create the change that we need. Really, really putting all effort that they have into our campaign to get this message bought. on the national stage, the progressive platform, Medicare for All, ending private prisons, college for all, the things we've been talking about for the last year in the campaign trail. This is what we need, and this is our opportunity.
Just make it a little extra painful for Trent Franks. Put a transgender progressive in his seat. That would be wonderful. I'd love to sneak a little video of Trent Franks on election night when Brianna takes his seat.
Especially, but, you know, this is a district where Trent Franks endorsed Steve Montenegro. And Steve Montenegro has the same sort of issues.
Yeah.
but a Trent Franks endorsement is still considered a good thing, which
amazing?
Is unbelievable.
Right.
It's just vote, the electorate is very
well. He was just
strange.
Looking for a surrogate, Michael.
That's true. That's he was just looking for a baby mama,
literally from his staff.
Right.
Okay. So that's Brianna. We're going to talk to her a little bit later, and we're going to find out the results. And we might go nuts, or we might not, depending on how it goes. By the way, after the elections are over, we have the results, etc. We're also going to do a special members segment for you guys. So we didn't have a post game today, so in essence we'll do a post game both on the election and other stuff as well. So tytnetwork.com/join. And by the way, thank you to all the members, because you make all these election nights possible. tytnetwork.com/join. Okay, now let me tell you about another candidate. So I'm now beginning to focus on a couple of candidates that you could call earthquake candidates that would create an earthquake if they won. Okay. So Alison Hartson, if she beats Feinstein, that's shock, earthquake. It would change the landscape of progressive politics. Another one is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So she's running in Queens and Bronx in New York, and she's running against Joe Crowley in the Democratic primary. Okay, also just Democrat, also no PAC, corporate PAC money. And has signed on to the progressive platform. She didn't.
Joe Crowley, has he been living in that district? Does he even?
No, he lives in Virginia. So look, and Alexandria focuses on that a decent amount. Those are, of course, the links for her. I've never thought, I'm keeping it 100% real here. I've never thought that that's like a particularly great political strategy to focus on that. They don't live here. But in this case, it might, because Joe Crowley was basically appointed rather than elected. I don't know if you know the history of how Crowley got into that seat. There was an incumbent there, and then at the last second he stepped down and said, "I want Crowley to be my guy." And so it was like right before the election, and so they threw him in and he won. Okay, because it's a heavily Democratic district. And since then, there's been almost no primaries of him. So it's just, and it's just so heavily Democratic, he just walks in every time. Now he's become like very powerful in that part of New York in terms of politics, although he doesn't live there, to answer your question. He lives in Virginia with his family. And I get it, you know, they're congressmen, they got to go to Washington a lot, etc. But it does, you know, it matters for some people. Anyway, and that district is heavily Latino and minority. And I think part of the point is that Crowley's kind of lost touch with who's in that district and hardly shows up. That's at least the point that Ocasio-Cortez makes. And Crowley's also very powerful in the House.
He's thought of as somebody who may, you know, win a leadership position should Pelosi and Clyburn and Hoyer step aside, that he would be one of the people that would get a leadership position.
Yeah, I think I've heard people refer to him as the fourth most powerful Democrat in the House.
Yeah.
He might go for Speaker of the House. And part of the reason people talk about him that way is the reason why you're going to want to support Alexandria. He raises a ton of money from Wall Street. And so forget the, you know, the racial demographics of the district, etc. Losing sight of that district, there aren't a lot of bankers in that district. Okay. Not a lot of Goldman Sachs employees living in that part of Queens and Bronx, okay? So it's not like he can say, well, I mean, what am I gonna do? I represent Wall Street, you know what I'm saying, right? No, he doesn't. He represents Queens and Bronx, which doesn't have anything to do with Wall Street. But he raises a ton of money from Wall Street, which, you know, has an upside, which he spreads it to a lot of the other Democrats, and that's why they like Crowley. That's, you know, when Nancy Pelosi's asked, why should you be leader? She's like, duh, I raise the most amount of money. So I give that to the other Democrats, and that helps them. So in her own way, she thinks that makes all the sense in the world. So Crowley raises a lot of money, and he never has to run in a primary. Mm-hmm. Now the thing is, primaries in a district like that can sometimes only 10,000 people vote. Or 10,000 is, I think, enough to win the race. That is so few amount of people. Mm-hmm. For like these people-powered campaigns, like she's gonna go try to get 10,000 petitions signed. Because in New York is one of the most pro-establishment states. They make it super hard to vote in the primaries. They make it super hard to get on the ballot. So she's got a tight window. She can't do the petitions before the window. She can't do the petitions after the window. And then Crowley, whenever anybody runs against them, challenges it legally because it gums up their works and it wastes their precious money. Because Crowley has a ton of money. His opponent has almost no money usually. And so he sues and goes, I challenge your petition signatures. Oh, there goes all your campaign money fighting that legal challenge. Okay, so but if she gets 10,000 signatures, that means she's probably gonna win. That's, you know, so it's not as simple as that, but kinda. So there's really not that many people vote in primaries. That's why the energy makes a huge, huge difference. So in her case, I think probably the donation link is Ocasio2018.com/fight, but go to her website or volunteer, because she needs people to go out there with those Ocasio2018.com/volunteer, for example, to get those people to go out there and get the signatures from people who actually live in that district. So deeply progressive, but go check out her website, see if you agree with her policies and her positions. And if she won, earthquake. I mean, nobody would expect her to beat Crowley.
No.
No, right? So
it's the easiest way to answer that is no.
And look, if we're talking about a normal off-year election, incumbents win, challengers don't. I mean, there'll be little blips here and there. Oh, look, a professor won in the middle of Iowa. That's curious, I wonder why. Anyway, we're moving on. This is an exception, it's not the rule. But with 85-point swings, you know, dotting the landscape, you really know who's gonna win and who's gonna lose? In primaries where only 10,000 people show up to vote? I don't know. That's why I keep telling you, look, if I thought I knew, I'd tell you. I'd say, oh, Brianna's gonna win tonight. I don't know. I don't know if she's gonna win. And so I think that the establishment is wrong if they think that these races are easy and they're gonna get a rude awakening when people actually show up and vote. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we are. And I said, like, from the very first show we did in 2018 is a giant question mark. I have no effing idea what's gonna happen. Like 2020, I'm sure by that time, progressives will win, right? Mm-hmm. But 2018 is the interregnum.
So what happened in 2006 was that they expected a blue wave. There was, but it could have been even bigger because Rahm Emanuel was doing the same thing. He was kneecapping the progressives, backing the establishment candidates. And in many races, they abandoned the primary winner, which happened to be a progressive, and then they just went and won anyway. So, but the theory is because they won so big in 2006 that Rahm was right. Right, that it was, you go with the establishment, you go with the corporate, and so they're repeating it again right now. And what they're doing is they're counting on another blue wave to happen, even if they sabotage the progressives. And they'll say, see, you don't need to go Bernie Sanders route. We got it anyway without him. But if you look back into that last, when in Virginia, and that night everybody won, the people to the farthest left were the people who won. Right. So, for instance, the district attorney in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, Krasner.
Right.
So, and what did he do? He got in office and immediately started changing things.
And they immediately started attacking him.
Yeah, but he did it.
Yeah.
And it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So many people are going to have their freedom now.
Yep.
And because if you don't know, sorry, Jimmy, just to tell the Krasner story, because if you put a progressive in office, it actually can make a difference. I know you're used to a whole lifetime of politicians lying to you and they never do anything, but Krasner went in there and he's like, I'm going to get rid of cash bail because for nonviolent offenders, because it is not to keep dangerous people in jail. They're all nonviolent offenders. It's to keep poor people in jail. Because if you're rich and you did a nonviolent offense, or even remotely middle class, you're going to have enough cash bail. You're going to be able to go out. It doesn't take that much cash bail because you didn't do a crime that's that serious. And we know you're going to show up. It's like you're not going to run on a misdemeanor or whatever, right? But the poor can't afford it, so they just sit in jail. He's like, I'm going to liberate them. They haven't been convicted. The rich guy didn't get convicted either. That's because in our system, you wait till conviction, right? Cash bail has been left over from thousands of years ago. It makes no sense. It makes sense in violent crimes. You don't want the guy to run. You don't want the danger to the community. But for a jaywalker, you don't need fucking cash bail, right? So he got rid of it. He just got rid of it. And that's it. You have change in Philadelphia now. So now poor people are on the same level as middle class and rich people. Isn't that amazing? Vote for progressives. Get real effing change.
Yeah, that's good. I forgot what I was saying, but that was good.
Sorry, you were saying the progressives ran and the further left they were.
Oh, that's right. I think, you know, that's a good sign that the furthest left people win. The bad sign is what's happening all over with the DCCC, and they're trying to, again, kneecap the progressives. And I don't know if we'll ever get, you think by 2020 we'll be able to take over the party?
Yeah. I mean, look, when we launched the Just Democrats in the beginning, it was a pirate ship. And it was supposed to board the aircraft carrier and take it over, okay? And now we see the aircraft carrier is filled with a bunch of knuckleheads, right? And they don't know where they're steering. They don't know where they're going. We talked about the Laura Moser race before. I don't know. Yeah. And so, and
it's kind of unusual what the DCCC did there. My only analysis of it is that they make a calculation because they're the party. That the only way this is winnable is with X kind of candidate. Culberson, first of all, it's, you know, I think that it's not necessarily winnable, even though it was a Clinton seat. Culberson, they're very used to voting for him in Houston. That notwithstanding, it's a tough seat. They think, in their analysis, this is what I'm guessing, that this is, that they're kind of charged with finding somebody who can win the seat. The people who are analyzing that for them are accustomed to supporting people who are more in line with a center of Texas politics, right? And so that they went for that. But it's still pretty unusual that they would go after somebody else.
And
supporting
them.
Somebody. Yes, yeah, smearing versus supporting. It's understandable that they would support the other candidate. It's surprising that they would smear the candidate challenging, in this case, the progressive.
Yeah, and irreversibly so. So we talked about it earlier, you know, I happen to think it's more a case of corruption. We had a long discussion about it. But if you're being charitable and you're saying they just think the other guy has a better chance of winning than Laura
Moser. It's a woman, actually. The other one's a woman as well.
Yeah, there's two other candidates
there's a woman that they think is going to be.
So if you're being charitable and you say, no, they're just used to thinking that the more centrist candidate is likely to win.
In Texas,
in that district. That goes to Jimmy's point about Rahm Emanuel. Because what happened? Rahm Emanuel pounded it into everyone's head, and every knucklehead in the mainstream media wrote the article, oh, centrists won in 2006 because of Rahm Emanuel's strategy. But The Intercept had a brilliant article recently, really long to be honest, I'm just keeping it real with you guys, but broke it down race by race, showing you, no, the guys who won were knocked back by Rahm Emanuel. They were the guys who were had less money, they were more progressive. Rahm Emanuel told the party, leave those guys to die, we're not going to back them, and we're not going to spend any money on them. And those are the guys who won. Not all of them, of course, right? And not in every race didn't fall neatly like that, but a whole heap of them. But nonetheless, those guys didn't, and all the different people involved in all the different states and local races didn't know the reporters as well as Rahm did. So Rahm rushed out after the election and said, it was me! It was me and my brilliant centrist campaign. By the way, the other guy who was enormously relevant in 2006 was Howard Dean. So, and Howard Dean did the 50-state strategy, and that worked back when Howard Dean was a progressive. And so, but somehow, and I remember covering that because we were on the air in the Young Turks. I'm like, wait, why is everybody giving all the credit to Rahm Emanuel and not to Howard Dean? I mean, at a minimum, I mean, it should be 50-50. They were both intimately involved in those races. And they fought, they didn't agree, right? Howard Dean wanted to go more progressive, but also broader in terms of this 50-state strategy. And Rahm wanted to focus on the purple districts, guys with more money, more centrist. And Howard Dean was right. But the winner, like in this case, it wasn't the winner's right to history books. It was the guy that they know in Washington and like and trust and have gotten 1,000 leaks from got the right to history books.
But they also define a victory in different ways too. I mean, that as Jimmy's saying, that you know it could have been a bigger victory had he not done that. But the Democrats at that time saw a blueprint for victory in this off-year election that ended up working for them, just not as well as it could have. And I think that but once Obama got into office and then once Emanuel was his chief of staff, Congress rejected Emanuel, which is why I think it hurt the Obama administration, but it also, I think, paved the way for his exit to do something else because they knew that that was not the way to relate to Congress. This Congress no longer wanted to relate to Emanuel.
So. And then Rahm Emanuel went and nailed it in Chicago. He's just done a brilliant job. Chicago is never in the news for bad news.
He's trying to privatize Lake Michigan right now.
The Cubs won the World Series while he was mayor.
Well, there you go. But that is the kind of thing Rahm Emanuel would take credit for. But last thing about Rahm Emanuel, if you guys don't remember, but a lot of progressives do, but in case you don't, his famous line when he was Obama's chief of staff was yelling at liberals and said, what do you call him? Fucking retarded?
Yes.
Yeah. He said, you know, you liberals are fucking retarded and you don't know what you're doing.
And even Sarah Palin was offended by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what the Obama White House thought of us. But on the other hand, they were playing three-dimensional chess. How'd that turn out?
To be fair, the entire Obama White House didn't feel that way.
But that was his chief of staff.
That was his chief. It was a big mistake on his part to make Rahm Emanuel his chief of staff. I think that when the book is written, he will say as much. I think it was a big, big mistake to put him there.
I said it then, too.
I always believed it was.
That's right. The book will literally be written soon. Obama's writing a book. Michelle Obama's writing a book. And I will be very curious to see what he says about Rahm Emanuel. Is he going to write a book that he actually says things?
He probably has a cordial relationship. Rahm Emanuel, he's building a library in Chicago. Let's not go overboard in what he's going to say about.
Yeah, he's not going to bury Rahm Emanuel.
The mayor, he's still the mayor of Chicago, and they're building a library there. There's got to be a little bit of, that kind of cordiality. But I do think that he's going to cite mistakes that were made, and those mistakes can be inferred that they were made by Rahm Emanuel.
But I don't know if it's a mistake. I think it was a plan, just like it was his plan to disband the army of people, young people. I think, why would he choose him in the first place? Why do you think he chose him in the first place?
I think that he thought that because Rahm Emanuel was this firebrand, because he led the DCCC and he led them in victory, that he had I think it was a poor estimation of Emanuel's relationship to Congress, to Democrats in Congress, and to some Republicans in Congress. He was wrong. It was a bad call. So he had this chief of staff who was really not well liked by a lot of members of Congress. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have someone who's a liaison to Congress when you are a one-term, half-a-term, two-year senator who became president, you need somebody stronger than that. But he also had an IOU to him because the organization for Obama had a lot to do with working in concert with the House at that time. It was a very tough call, I would imagine. There are a lot of people
who consider that.
I don't remember either. I would imagine that there were people on Biden's staff. I think Ron Klein maybe would have been people who ended up working for Joe Biden who were probably eligible for that. Ron Klein's the first guy I can think of.
Ron Emanuel wasn't chief of staff for long though, right? How long?
A couple of years.
A couple of years. Yeah. Like 7 times as long as anyone has worked for this president.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's a super low bar.
Yeah, 200 times longer than Scaramucci.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So, guys, hopefully we're going to get results soon. So before we run out of time, I actually want to do one other thing for you guys. Guys, we're going to go to graphics 17 through 21 and then to video 1. I tell you all that because I didn't tell you that ahead of time. Okay? So normally we do the production ahead of time. All right. So I want to tell you guys about one other thing, and that's Wolfpack volunteers and people who are sending in videos. So we came up with this idea called hashtag be the wolf. So what I wanted people to do is just film themselves while they're doing stuff for Wolfpack, volunteering. And I don't know what they're going to write. We did the first video when we had a Wolfpack national get together here in LA. And I went around the room and shot the video. And of course, I held the camera the wrong way because I'm me. And I introduced all the guys and all their nicknames and stuff. And I keep emphasizing Richard Saffel. Richard Saffel's from West Virginia. He goes down to the State House so often, they call him Richard Wolfpack Saffel. Okay, at the State House. So, and then there's in Colorado, there's Grant the Mountain Man. Etc. Right, so it's super fun. The first video went well, so we said, "Okay, guys, now the volunteers go make videos." So one person did, and it turned out not one person, a bunch of people did, right? And you should check out their Facebook page and link below and all that stuff. But this one was pretty powerful. So, but before I get to that, I want to show you some pictures because they get together all across the country. And what I love about Wolfpack is they're America. Okay. So these are folks working, middle age, older, younger, and they go down to the State House and they fight. And they fight. They get there. They talk to the legislators. They take them out to lunch. Sometimes they have beers with them, right? You know what you're looking at right there? America. Okay. So that's the Wolfpack team in Delaware, and then they go in and they convince their legislators. That's how they won in Rhode
Island.
They
took over the legislature.
That's right. That's it. Sorry, you weren't coming for us. We were coming for you. We took your house. So that's Delaware, and I can show you state after state. But I want to show you the video here. We had, for legal reasons, we had to bleep out the person that he called, and of course his own phone number. But just watch. And so this is a guy who decided, I've had enough, and I'm going to get involved. Watch.
Hey, my name is Dan Lemp, and I just had the Wolfpack orientation 2 days ago. It's Tuesday now. That was on Sunday, and I'm about to call my state legislator for the first time ever. I've never made a call to the government, but I honestly don't really like making phone calls. So I'm pretty nervous, but this is way too important. And it's just time for me to step up and take action. So here we go. Hey, how's it going today?
Good.
Good. So my name is Dan Lemp, and I live in Representative's District. So I'm calling about the Free and Fair Elections resolution. It's absolutely the most important issue for me. Really nothing else compares. That's my top issue. And I just really want to see that resolution get passed and call for a convention to pass the 28th Amendment to restore free and fair elections. So as your constituent, I really just wanted to say that I'd really like to see and support the resolution so that the voices of average citizens aren't overshadowed by special interests. I think it's going to change the country and the world for the better and make our government do a better job of serving for the people. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you for calling about this. Can I just so I can make sure that we can keep in touch with you and send you newsletters and things like that, can I have your address?
Yeah, my home address?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so normally it's...
All right, cool. All right, I will let her know that you called on this issue and make your opinion known to her, all right?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Have a good day.
All right, I did it. So I saw that it only takes 3 calls for an issue to get onto a senator's radar, and then it takes 10 calls on a particular issue for a senator or a representative to start considering supporting it. So just if me and a couple friends gather up and call our representative, then that makes a big difference to them. I've been thinking about doing this for a long time, and after the Florida shooting, I was fed up and I had enough. Like it maddens me to know that, that people are dying just because because the NRA can buy out politicians and buy elections. And it keeps happening. This keeps happening, and no one's making any difference about it. So it's time for us to take responsibility for our government and take action to make the changes that we need to be made, because we can complain about what's going on. We can complain about what's going on all we want, but the only thing that's going to make a difference is taking action and getting money out of politics. So it feels really good to finally step up and take that action and kind of overcome that that nervousness and just make the call. All right. Thank you.
So if you want to send in your own video, community@wolf-pack.com. We'll have the link down below. Look, people care. Yeah. And what a lot of people don't know and why they don't get involved is they don't realize how many other people care. And that if you got together, you could make a giant difference. So every team that has won for Wolfpack in the different states that we've won, California, Illinois, etc., have formed incredible bonds that last a long time. And all come back saying it's the most fulfilling thing they've ever done in their lives. So get in the fight, and you saw there from that video, It doesn't take much. That's it. Just gathered up the courage to make the call, made the call, read the statement, and he's on the board. And now Dan's one of our warriors, and we fight forward. So come join us. Let's fight together. And when we win together, it'll be the greatest thing that you ever did. Hey, okay, yes.
Did you know that, I don't know if you already talked about this, but in this 8th district in Arizona, that there were 300,000 voters who got ballots by mail, but they also had an insert in them. Did you know about this?
No.
So the insert said you can vote for two different candidates. Okay, well, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You can do it in certain races, like for Arizona Corporation Commission or school boards, but it's not allowed for an election in U.S. House of Representatives. And so all the ballots in this primary that have more than one candidate marked aren't going to be counted. Can you believe they did that? They put an insert.
Yes is the answer to can you believe they did that.
I guess
that?
Yes.
Yeah. So what do we think? That was just a mistake?
It wasn't clear enough, maybe. I mean, I haven't seen it yet. But
the ballot itself says you can't mark more than one, but the insert that they sent to people said, don't forget you can vote for more than one.
Wow.
That's weird.
We do have some results from Arizona as well.
Well, that diagram actually read vote for not more than two. That's what it said.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So some results in from Arizona.
Yeah, let me give you what I have in these some results.
Here we go.
Yeah, there
they pulled it up.
Yeah.
So obviously the one we care more about is the Democratic primary, and there Brianna Westbrook is down. 20,121 votes for Tippernanny,
Hiral Tippernanny.
And Westbrook is at 41.1% with 14,012 votes. So now it says they're less than 1% reporting, but they counted the early votes.
Yeah, and they counted early votes. And listen, obviously, with less than 1%, you cannot call the race. People are projecting that it's going to be less go for the Republicans and Tippernanny for the Democrats. This race becomes much more winnable if Montenegro, for either Westbrook or Tippernanny, if Montenegro is the candidate, because he is so stained by the Frank stuff. If Lesko is, then it becomes, you know, what is likely anyway to remain a Republican seat.
So it looks like for the moment being, those initial results are Lesko and Tippernanny. But it's with so little reporting, and one other thing that's super important, which is we haven't done a lot. We've done a lot of presidential elections here at TYT. So I know when Cuyahoga County is going to come in and what a difference it's going to make, right?
Right.
But I don't know what 1% reporting in Arizona's 8th district means.
You got to wait for Sun City. Is, really
is that right? Saying. Okay, we're waiting.
Well,
for
it's a very old district. I mean, it's disproportionately old.
The median age of voters, at least early voters, was 69.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, look, it's predominantly conservative, and the voters tend to be older, and so. You know, it's exciting to have a transgender candidate. And, you know, living in Los Angeles, you think anything's possible because of, you know, the mindset here. But it's a different mindset in Arizona, especially this
district. They have an openly gay representative
they do.
As well.
They
and
do.
So there are, you know, but yeah, what you say is true. It's very old. It's very retiree. It's very conservative. These are people who elect Trent Franks regularly. So that's all you need to know about them.
So, and I don't want to, but I want to keep it real with you guys that the election desk.
Decision desk.
Apparently, Michael, tell us more about them and why.
Decision desk is a sort of a crowdsourced reporting, and they have it down to a science. It's a fascinating thing. You should look up Decision Desk HQ. You should follow them. They look for volunteers in states everywhere to do reporting for them. So it's not typical exit polling. They've called the race for Tipper Nenni and for Lesko, and when they call races, I don't know that they've ever been wrong about it. I've never seen them change a result, but that may not be true, but they're pretty accurate and they're pretty interesting in their approach because so many people have struggled recently to figure out what exit polling really means and if it's accurate and not to mention polling beforehand. They have a good election night strategy in place and they say now that the race is over, but they're not the AP and they're not who we always rely upon for that. But this is what they're saying.
Yeah, and again, very few percentage reporting, we'll see. But I want to see those numbers again. Can you put those back up? Because so two things to get out of these. I want to see the Republicans in a second too. But
so it looks as if it's being called as well there, right, with the check mark.
What site are you guys getting that from, Edwin? Can you pass that on to us? So
New York Times.
So New York Times has called it. Okay, so it is likely over. The part of the point I wanted to make is it's still not a lot of voters. So if you can get out there in other races and knock on doors and get people like in places like Texas where there's early voting, you can actually, you know, you have a lot of time to drive people to the polls, to get mail-in ballots, etc. So 21,000 would have won it, it looks like. You know, again, we don't know if that's the final numbers.
She's up 19% right now on Westbrook is Tipper Nenni, but... Again, that's not where it's going to finish. It may finish wider, it may finish less. I don't know. The early vote is pretty big in this district.
Yeah, so now let me see the one with the Republicans too. So there, Lesko is winning with 23,000 votes. But if you look at all those votes, there's a lot more on the Republican side than there are on the Democratic side.
Yeah.
So now the Republican side, they might vote more in primaries. That's possible. But likely, they've got more voters.
Actually, they do. And Democratic turnout in this race, Democratic early voting turnout, is higher than it's ever been in a race there. So Democrats are happy about that, especially considering this is such a Republican district. And so many of their candidates were sullied by, you know, not to mention Trent Franks, but innuendo having to do with Lesko financially, having to do with Montenegro for the same, you know, sexting, texting stuff. So, you know, again, I wouldn't be optimistic if I were Hillel Tipper Nenni of winning this race. It would have been better if Montenegro was there. But again, if there's Democratic energy that Westbrook has created to get behind Tipper Nenni, they could maybe flip this seat.
Okay. So we're going to take a quick break here, guys. When we come back, we're going to have Brianna Westbrook on. And so we'll talk to her about the race. See if she agrees that it's over or not. And what lessons did she learn from the race, etc. So let's come back and do that. All right, back on the Young Turks election night coverage. Before we go back to Arizona's 8th district, I wanted to check in on Kansas one more time, and I got a fun note I just got from the candidate Brent Welder. So TYTKansas.com, let me see where we are. We started the night with about 930 individual donors. Now we're at 1,140 individual donors.
Nice.
$27,262 raised. 50,000 gets them a field team.
You'd think we could afford a better thermometer with all that money.
That thermometer is a little old school. Well, I hear you, but I've kind of gotten used to it, and I kind of like it.
Get a new one, updated, make it Celsius.
Maybe Brent will donate to that after he wins his race. He can donate back to the thermometer fund.
All right. Let's see. You know, can we do 1,200? Is that too many people to ask for? Is that too much? Can we try?
You're always asking for more.
I know, right? So that we can get good progressives in the office. Okay, so Brent sent me a note I just wanted to share with you real quick. He said, wow. After the interview tonight, our campaign eclipsed more this fundraising than this month. I'm sorry.
What he said was, wow, after the interview tonight, our campaign eclipsed more fundraising this month than any month since we announced our candidacy in July of 2017. Since TYT started your efforts on our behalf last week, we've had our biggest fundraising day, week, and now month of the campaign.
Nice.
Then he said, what are you wearing, Cenk? That's weird.
No, nope. He didn't say that. And he did have an American flag, though, in the text, which was very nice. It's a nice touch. Okay. Now joining us, Brianna Westbrook. She was running in Arizona's 8th District. There was an election tonight, special election. Primaries there to replace Trent Franks, the Republican and Democratic side, obviously. So Brianna, what's your take on the results so far?
Well, right now we're down by about 6,000 votes with the early ballots being reported. We're still waiting on today's results. So my treasurer, who's been in Maricopa County, he's actually the treasurer for Maricopa County Democrats, sitting next to me, says we got about 7,000 more that are expected to hit within the next hour. So we're going to have to get the remainder of the votes in order to get this W. But I'll tell you right now, I am very excited with the results where we're at right now, because we've achieved 14,000 votes so far without spending a dime on mailers, without spending a dime on robocalls. These are people just buying into the message. So I am very impressed what we've accomplished so far to this point. It's just that we need to make the message louder, because it's there and people are rallying behind it. So we'll see how this ends in here in the next probably 50 minutes or so. Is what we were told by the recorder, kind of where we're at.
So, Brianna, I wanted to actually just touch on what you just said there. So, what did your opponent, what was she able to do with the extra resources she had that you couldn't do?
Well, what she was able to do was robocalls for one and mail drops. I've been watching her campaign very, very closely. She's had two mail drops over the course of the last 3 weeks. That costs thousands of dollars that I don't have because I haven't been investing in fundraising. I've just been investing in people, and that's how we got 14,000 votes so far. We just need to be able to get the message louder and hit more homes. Because if we would have been able to do that, I'm sure right now with the early ballots, it would be the other way around, because our message is authentic and true. We just need to raise more money. I got into this race with the mindset originally that I was going to be in the August primary. So I'm very happy with where we're at right now. And I know where we need to be for August, if that's where we're going to be next, regardless of how tonight ends.
So because this is a special election, and so the regular election is going to happen in 2018 as well, right? So then if whether it's Tipper Nanny, if she pulls this out on the Democratic side, or Lesko on the Republican side, you're going to have another race and another primary in August, right?
Yeah, I'm actually having the full term here in August. August 28th is the one for the full 2-year term. All we're doing in this race is we're basically just filling the seat for, you know, just a few months, just to end the term. So this isn't the official. No, we have the real one coming up, even though this is real too.
Right, I understand. And so when you say mail drops, is that the flyers that people send to your house that she got to do?
Yeah, she got a chance to do the mail drops with flyers, which coincidentally over the course of the last week and a half have gotten more progressive, mimicking a lot of my campaign. So she's taking stuff away from our campaign that we weren't able to reach yet with voters, just because she has the resources and the money to do it.
So I want the audience to get a sense of, you know, what the money goes towards. And so every once in a while we raise money for some of the candidates, And I want them to understand the consequences too. So because you can have the best message in the world, if nobody hears it, then the other side wins. And in what you just said is really interesting and powerful, which is you could have such a good message that they could kind of copy your message, but if they've got more money, they send it to people as if it's their message. And so, unfortunately, money does make a big difference. You can counter it with people power, it's true. And so, you know, you keep on organizing and you can get the message out that way as well. So both sides do make a difference, both of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, just what, 5 weeks ago, we got a lawsuit thrown up against us for our ballot signatures. So they were attacking our money. We had to spend $6,500 on a lawyer. So that's money that we could have had to spend on a mailer, but we had to spend on a lawyer. Because they're scared of us. They want to make us spend our resources, and that's what they did. They attacked our money, and they took our ability to reach voters with this message. And they know it's the right message because they're taking the same message that we have. If you look at the last week and a half, it's very similar to ours. And it's I know that we have a win here. We just got to hit more homes. We've got 14,000 votes. Without spending a dime, like I said, on mailers. We've got over 2,000 individual contributions, while she's only got a couple hundred. People are buying into this. We just need more money to touch more people, and we need to raise money. And I'm focused on right now, regardless of what happens tonight, I know where I'm at, and I know where I need to be at. So I'm one of these types of people that I don't quit. I'm in this for the long haul. I'm here to create change for this country and for the state of Arizona. And I'm gonna buckle down, and we're gonna raise a crap ton of money, and we're gonna make sure that Arizona, every Democrat and independent here in Arizona, knows who Breonna Westbrook is and who this message is, because we will win. This is our opportunity, and we will get it.
Breonna, just a question. It's Michael Schur. I had a question for you about what you do now. Let's presume that these results hold, just for the hypothetical here. Where do you go from here? Do you support the candidacy of the Democrat? Because you're going to presumably be running against her in August if she's going to run again, whether or not she wins or loses. Or do you just sort of bow out of this? Or do you just rail against the Republicans because they're going to be in their own same problem? Where do you go from here?
Well, I'm going to do whatever I can to at least try to help her. I want to make sure Democrats win, for one. I don't want a Republican in there, because the way the results look right now, we have Debbie Lesko as the Republican nominee, and she is just, for lack of better terms, evil. She's owned by the American Legislative Exchange Council. She has some horrible bills that she's put through the Arizona State House. She's the last person we need in Congress. So I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure Debbie Lesko doesn't win, and I'm taking on Lesko,
right.
And I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure she doesn't get that seat.
And Breonna, I want to interrupt you on Lesko just for a second. If play political analyst here, you know the district better than anybody, any of us here. In your estimation, who was the most beatable Republican there? It seemed to me that Montenegro was from afar, because he was tainted by the same things that Franks was, and that Franks himself endorsed him. Is that a correct read, or is Lesko just as flawed?
No, Lesko is just as flawed. Lesko and Montenegro, both of them. I'm surprised that Lesko had the results that she did, but I'm also not surprised, because she's, lack of better term, she's crazy. And in Arizona, it seems to be the crazier you are as a Republican, the better chances you are to be elected.
Right.
They're both flawed.
Right. Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. Breonna Westbrook, a real fighter. And so she's going to keep on fighting tonight, and we'll see where it ends up. And I appreciate that you're going to fight the crazy Republicans, and I appreciate that you're going to come back and fight again in August.
Yeah, still a candidate for Congress no matter what happens tonight.
That's right.
I got into this thinking that I had an August race, and what's amazing is this. You know, we were just talking last night or a couple nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't invested in fundraising. I have an army of volunteers. I got 75 volunteers. I'm going to pick up the camera right now and show you who I have here with me. I have lots and lots of people here supporting us. We have the people. We have, yeah. we have the people. We just need to get the message louder. So I'm going to focus on fundraising. And I'm a salesperson. That's what I do right now for a job. And we're going to make it happen. And in August, we're going to win.
So now, Brianna, you showed me, you know, that you were too strong a second ago. But just be careful. I know that you're for gun control. So, you know. So keep those guns at bay, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Brianna Westbrook, everybody. Thank you for joining us again. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Everybody at home, please donate to the campaign so we can get this message louder. $15, $5, $8.
See, already learning lessons and going forward and applying those. So those links, of course, will be down below if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook. All right, so we have our first result. It's not exactly what I was hoping for. But I loved Brianna's attitude afterwards. And I look, for my cup of tea, that's exactly right. Let's go kick some Republican ass, and then we'll come back and do it again in August. Okay.
And also, there's something to be said for being flattered that your opponent is taking your message. It means your message is right. They had more money to get it out there, which is just that's what she knew she was up against from the very get-go. But her message is right, and that's, you know, that's important.
Yep. Okay, guys, so here's what we're going to do. For all the members, stay right here. We're going to have a post game, touch on the elections just a little bit more, but then also have some fun, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to throw a curveball here because Anna and I were debating this a very important issue earlier in the day.
Okay.
Okay, and is ballet entertaining?
Oh, my God.
We just got to have a little bit of fun at the end of the night.
There was
okay?
a little bit of a would you rather game going on. So maybe we'll touch
okay.
on that.
So yeah. potentially disastrous would you rather game for the members. And thank you to all the members for making tonight possible. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. So let's take a quick break and then come back with the post game for the members.